trickles into the net, and the Maple Leafs are going to win this one with 14.9 seconds left.
Hey, yo! It's the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm JD Bunkus, Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar, Alex Kerfoot, the cover king. Way to go, Alex Kerfoot. Way to get that sucker down the ice for the cover, baby.
The wake and rake needed you.
That's all that we're talking about today.
Yeah.
No, what the wake and rake needed was my buddy. Not to lie to me that he knows anything about college basketball.
Yeah, that guy's no longer your buddy. No longer your friend.
Oh, it's over. Yeah, no. By the way, just I want you to know, at least to start this, is that I spent that entire evening hammering him over text. And, like, you know when you hammer somebody in sports conversation and it's like the 18th text in a row where they haven't replied because they're watching their team lose and you're just berating them over and over and over again? Otherwise known as me whenever my friends who cheer for the Cowboys play and the Cowboys play a team above 500. Like, that's what that is.
I feel that way now because of the new iOS update. When you are talking to someone, it'll say so-and-so has their notification silenced now. And, like, you know that
really?
They've, like, yeah, you can have that show up in your feed. So if I went to click on your name now and you had it silenced, it would be like, JD has his notification silenced. So it's like they don't want to talk. Like, they're done. Like, they're done.
That's
with your...
weird.
Yeah, it's like a new feature you can do. So
like
I'm
that.
Surprised your friend didn't do that and just be like, don't talk to me.
God, that's too much. That's too much. Like, what's next, iOS? Your friend is taking pee. Don't talk to your friend while they pee. No, I don't want that.
This is great for me. I already have you guys muted on Instagram and Twitter, and now I can...
I know.
No notifications,
we know.
You guys on text.
Yeah, Blake doesn't claim us. Blake doesn't claim us. So the Leafs get a win. The Leafs get a big W. A huge W. What could have been... This was a weird one. This was a bad one. This is one of those wins where you don't feel great afterwards. I feel really great about Ilya Mikheyev, my sniper son, who I've stood behind since day one. I've always been an Ilya Mikheyev guy. Always. Ever since this guy came out and said, we need more soup in this city, I said, this is my guy. Skates like McDavid. If there were fans to watch that game, you didn't miss McDavid skating because you'll always have Ilya Mikheyev. But the problem with him is always the finishing, and now all of a sudden he's a sniper. But I'm going to start with the bad today because it shouldn't have been like that. That's not the way the Toronto Maple Leafs are supposed to play. And frankly, I do believe that this team has to be held to a pretty high standard right now because of where it is that they're supposed to go. And last night, no fans, a 1-0 lead against an Edmonton Oilers team that was missing Connor McDavid, that was missing Tyson Barrie. The Leafs tried to play shinny, and it reminded me a little bit of the old Leafs. And I wonder if you guys think that there's any validity to my fear that this team has some of that in their DNA. And of course, every team, it's an 82-game season. You're not going to play with playoff intensity throughout the entire thing, right? You end up with a game against the Ottawa Senators with no fans, and your coach says there wasn't intensity. I go, yeah, that's kind of understandable, coach. Your team didn't play for forever and a day. They have to adjust to no fans, and they're playing a team that, frankly, belonged in the AHL. This one was a little different. You knew you were facing an Edmonton Oilers team that was going to play with a little desperation. You had just been called out. It's your second game back. You're at home. And I know it's not in front of fans. But they played very, very sleepy. Not any energy. Really some sloppy mistakes in the defensive zone. Nick Ritchie on that first goal, the back check was just...
Oh, hey, what man, back you, check?
Well, that's it. You were just a healthy scratch, buddy. Like, a game ago, you were a healthy scratch. And now you can't back check? What's happening here? My fear is what I was saying earlier about no fans, that without them, there's really no intensity. And without any intensity, the Leafs revert back to one of their worst forms, which is a team that at times can play some pretty lackadaisical, low energy, low IQ hockey.
Yeah, I think yesterday was kind of the opposite outcome that I had hoped for. I thought, you're right, they would come in, they'd play with a little bit more energy, they'd be back on home ice, which I know there's no fans, but just being in that routine and being back in your locker room, like, that that gives you an upper edge to the other team. But I didn't see that, and it was slow. And yeah, there was just like a little bit of a lackadaisical effort by some of the players that you're hoping want to get that routine and get that momentum going. And the fact that Connor McDavid isn't there, we basically thought, well, I thought that this would just be a spanking, and it was way too close. And it just kind of, you're right, the idea that maybe this is an identity that we don't want the Leafs to fall into, but you see little glimpses in games like this, it can be something that worries you a bit. I think they go on a long road trip. That gives me a little bit of something to look into. Can they sustain this little bit of winning that they have? But they're going to have to play a lot better than they did. They're going to go play the Avalanche. Like, the Avalanche, I know that they almost lost to those Blackhawks the other day in my Wake and Rake, but they're a damn good team. You can't show up and play 70% against a team like that, or you're going to get embarrassed. So I think they were lucky to win by 2 goals. It was obviously a lot closer than that. Good for my Wake and Rake, but yeah, I wasn't super impressed with, like, really anyone other than Mikheyev, and he shouldn't be the guy that you're, like, parading around for showing up on a Wednesday night.
Yeah, I thought it was just, you know, a pretty ho-hum game, right? It didn't seem like it had the intensity of the way we talked about this game coming into it. It didn't seem like they were, either side was as up for it as kind of we were in teeing it up. And obviously it's nice to be able to take a W out of a game like that, where you obviously don't look or feel your best, but, you know, I have some patience for the explanation that Sheldon Keefe gave after the game, which was basically like no fans being in the arena is, you know, it's causing the game to suffer, and maybe you're not pulling as much energy from that, but like, this is your near term and maybe your medium term, and that doesn't really hold up. So great that you can get the win out of a game like that. But it wasn't like, if you're ranking, since they've turned things around, how impressed you are with a win from them, this is pretty low.
Yeah, and just to build on the Sheldon Keefe thing after the game, saying that, you know, kind of felt like a scrimmage out there. It's just, you hear that and you're like, okay, yeah, but that's the situation you're in. And you can't use that excuse and keep saying, well, yeah, the guys aren't as motivated. There's no fans. Well, that's probably not going to change in the near future. So by acknowledging that and kind of giving it legs, it can become something you can lean on. And JD, you've been on this for the last month saying that they're going to suffer. Like, this sucks to watch games without fans. And last night was a perfect example of a game that should have been way more high energy, way more high scoring, that was just lackluster because of the fact that there's no fans. But you need to find a way to, I don't know, inspire your team. John Tavares, you need to be a leader. You need to say, hey, yeah, there's no fans, but we're playing for something still. Like, we can't just like let off the gas until there's fans and then just like have this new energy. Like, you need to play that way for the rest of the season regardless.
So there's a couple things here. That to me is a real something. You have to be able to find your own motivation, and you cannot have it come from the crowd, because there is real potential that fans are not in the seats come playoff time. Really. I'm sure we should all be optimistic. We should all believe that is going to be the case, but it's not a guarantee at this point, not in this province, not here, not with this political climate, not with the way that how infectious this new strain is. It is not a guarantee that you end up having a full capacity barn at that point. You might even still have restrictions when people go to the arena if they do return, like the increased focus on masking, the potential to continue to limit concession sales, which means, you know, it's going to be a less rowdy crowd. It means that maybe people aren't even going to want to pay for some of the exorbitant ticket prices that you need in this city. It's not a given. And so, yes, it's going to be important for those guys to be able to generate their own, yes, motivation in games like that. What I will say is a couple quick things that are sort of excuses for them. One is, the Toronto Maple Leafs also live in Ontario, and they are, I hate when people do this, but it should be said, they're probably susceptible to some of the same feelings that a lot of us have had recently. They have probably had family members, like if you're Michael Bunting, who is from here, you don't think, or Mitch Marner, who is from here, you don't think that a lot of conversations with family members and friends have been about new restrictions and new fans and just the weight of some of this. We all know how this feels. And yes, the pandemic is not the pandemic for all of us. Those guys are very, 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 very privileged when it comes to their jobs, in the sense of they still get to go to gyms. They still get to go to work. They get a lot of different things that are advantageous to them. But if we're just talking about athletes being creatures of routine and athletes being creatures of habit, this is another time where their season has been interrupted. They've had to come back. They come back with no fans. They come back in a province that has restricted a lot of the ways that they can either go to restaurants or be social with one another. And it's probably sapped a lot of the enjoyment out of being a hockey player right now. And I know that nobody wants to hear that, because who cares? And it's why I would never bring this up in a normal conversation. But this is a sports show, and we're talking about why the Leafs look the way that they have so far these last couple of games. And that one in particular, I couldn't help but feel like, okay, well, I'm going to give this a little bit of time, because this is a pretty big readjustment period. But also, I'm sorry, that was why you guys lost to Montreal, is because you took your opponent too lightly. You're up 3-1, and you started to grip the sticks a little too tight once you let that little phase go past you. And I don't know if the Leafs get into a playoff series and end up taking anybody lightly anymore, but I am afraid that there is something inherent, that there is something built in, and I think we all are, that the Leafs can get that shitty scrimmage vibe to their team in a way that doesn't happen with every other team in the NHL. That even when it's an off night, it's not sometimes maybe the same off night for a team that's supposed to be a contender like that, that's supposed to be hungry like that.
I would say that the reason I think that they can step easier into that shinny mentality is because they are so unbelievably talented up front.
Yep.
That it's just, there's so many good players that you don't almost have that pressure at times, because you have that core four. It's like there's four of us that are some of the most elite players in the league. And hey, you know, it's not just me by myself. There is a little bit of mentality is that you can just go through the motions, like William Nylander the other night, not last night, last game. He's got those two goals that he really had no business getting. He had a pretty lackluster game, and he pots two goals, like the fifth and sixth goal, and, you know, there he goes. Like, I think of him as someone that can easily kind of step into that shinny mentality, or that I'm not going to give it my 100% because I'm so talented. Like, I could see that being something that happens. And if you become a creature of habit in these games where there's less stakes, there's less intensity in the building, you know you're good enough to do that. That's what worries me down the line. It's like now they're going to go to the United States where there's fans. Well, that'll be fun, like to play in front of fans, you'll get that energy. Mm-hmm. But then when you come back, is it the balloon deflated again because you're no longer in that energy? That's something for sure that we can track and be cognizant of, because it could definitely be a storyline moving forward.
For sure. And again, you're trying not to overreact to this one game and give them time to have this happen. I guess my bigger, greater underlying thing is, one is, you are a team that has a track record of having this happen. This isn't just a one-off with you. It's been something that's been an issue with this core for quite some time. But two is, you know, I was thinking about this just as Kyrie Irving was returning yesterday, right? How we made a lot of we've made a big deal about how the Nets are going to do this, right? Mm-hmm. How we were talking to Tim Bontemps yesterday, right? Blake's buddy, about how are you going to work this in? How is this going to happen? Is this feasible? And I thought, there's a little bit of Kyrie Irvingness to what the Leafs are going through right now, which is, you're going to go on the road and you're going to have fans and you're going to feel energy and they're going to feel like real hockey games. And then half of the time, you're going to return home and play in front of no fans in what feels like shinny and scrimmages, right? Mm-hmm. You saw it. Look at even that game. And I'll get to the Hyman stuff in a second, but that was not an intense game by any measure. And even the Oilers were guilty of it too, because I've watched Zach Hyman play a lot of hockey games, and that didn't look like Mr. Intensity at times to me. You know, I kind of expected him to have a little bit more bite against the Leafs. I expected them to have a little bit more bite against him. And yeah, it reminded me of Kyrie, thinking you're going to have half your games with him and half of them without. And that's the way I feel about fans in hockey, especially when it's your home crowd.
Yeah,
so they found out. Go ahead, Blake.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, they found a way to win. I know people are going to be like, well, you guys so Debbie Downers on the Leafs. Like, yes, they found a way to win in an important game that, you know, had higher stakes before McDavid was reeled out of the lineup. Like, we can take pauses from that. But at the same time, this is the part of this show that we want to find things to talk about that maybe are not just the box score. Like, were we super pleased with the Leafs' performance? No, but we can also say, yes, they won, and I feel good about that and feel good about them finding a way and some of their players that aren't superstars getting on the scoreboard. You can have both, but definitely when you look at the next couple games and you just don't want to see a pattern of coming back to Canada, falling into this slump, there just needs to be some sort of internal drive or this motivation or someone in your team that can elevate your level of play when there isn't the external noise to help with that.
Yeah, and we're going to be able to kind of put a pin in this conversation for a little bit. Eight of their next nine are on the road in the U.S.
That takes us
into February and into the Olympic break.
Nice.
What a gift.
So
what a gift. Oh,
yeah.
Eight of nine. Blake, I didn't, honest to God, I didn't know that until right now. I just felt overwhelmed with joy. That's the best news that I've had in a couple of days, is that the Leafs will be going and playing on the road in front of fans in actual hockey games. Thank you. I'm right now the Robert Downey Jr. meme where he's just, you know, eyes closed, hand over the heart, just grateful. Hashtag blessed.
So to bring you back down to earth a little bit, next Tuesday and Wednesday, they have a 10 p.m. back-to-back. So you'll be feeling it a little bit, but worthwhile trade-off, I think, for eight of their next nine. And again, that takes us into what we're anticipating is the big reschedule stretch. And that lets them or us, however you want to phrase it, punt this crowd thing almost a month down the line, where January 26th is their only home game scheduled between now and February 24th. But we'll see how that gets juggled. But yeah, so this thing about, can you play in front of an empty crowd? Can you get up for that? You know, it's going to be a non-question for a little bit at least.
I do also, that's the last thing I'm going to say about watching this is, Blake, you often talk about noise when we discuss statistics, right? Hey, what's the noise around these stats? What can we eliminate? What is the variable that we're looking at here that we try to remove when we're trying to really look and find some good data? And that's sort of how I feel watching these games too, is I can't tell if the lack of fans, like the chicken or the egg thing here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which one is it here? Am I bored because there's no fans and they're playing boring hockey? Is there a part of me that's going into this and I'm reminded of the situation that we're in Ontario when I see those empty fans and it's not the same escape for me, so I'm not having as much fun? Like, there's a bit of noise in all of this where it feels like we're all bitching and moaning about watching no fans, that I wonder if it is permeating into the way that we watch these games and how much the product is different. It's like, that's why I'm so glad that Sheldon Keefe has been here a couple of times to say, hey, you're not all taking crazy pills. I see the same thing you are. But I also wonder if even an educated hockey eye like that, like what the players think over a sample, or whether or not this is just something that, I know it's not all in our heads, but I wonder how much of it is added on by this.
Yeah, I think there's also an element of noise, like emotional noise, I guess, in the fact that, you know, how did we tee up the season, right? It's nothing matters till the playoffs, and then they get off to a bad start, so the turnaround is important and feels bigger. They are 24-1 since that bad start. It is also, like, just a little tough 25 games into a really dominant stretch to, like, be super impressed, I think, too, right? So there's also an element of like
that.
You've seen what you need to see at this point, right? So
is that the one big number? Because that's a really big number.
It's not, but there you go, 24-1 over their last 25. So I do think that is, there's like an emotional component, or maybe not emotional, but like when you're trying to view these games and get up for them as a fan, even it's like, okay, well, this Colorado game ahead, you can get up for because it's Colorado and it's on the road. And we kind of got, you know, not the best Colorado game last time around. But like an Oilers game where McDavid gets pulled out and the Oilers are struggling. It's like, okay, well, you're kind of at the point in the season where you're looking for ancillary things to get really hyped up for in these games. So I wonder if that plays into it as well with the no crowds.
That's a really great point.
So do you want the one big number? It's not. It's we could just do it quickly and move on.
Yeah, well, I think we got two things that we should hit on. One is Hyman's return, the video tribute, and the other is the number. But let's start with the one big number.
Yeah, the one big number is just – it's a pretty straightforward one. Like Matthews last night had five scoring chances at 5-on-5. I only bring this up not because there's a greater point around it, but I was looking at the leaders in terms of scoring chances per natural stat trick. Auston Matthews has been credited with 120 scoring chances this year at 5-on-5. The next closest player has 102. Matthews is behind in the scoring race in a way that he's got some ground to make up here, and his shooting percentage overall has come back to, you know, roughly where we'd expected. A six-goal gap is hard to make up in you know, 45 games or so. I think Auston Matthews might have a run in him here where, you know, he pushes even further up that Rocket Richard race, because he is blowing everyone away in terms of scoring opportunities at 5-on-5. And then obviously he's a very, very gifted power play scorer as well.
Yeah, they just have to take him off. They just have to take Mitch Marner off the power play and he'll be back. He'll score a ton of goals there.
Oh.
That's all he needs to get right and get back going, and he'll start to rip goals. You know,
we know Marner's not scoring the power play goals, so.
We do know that.
It is interesting that he, you know, he's tied for fourth, I believe, in goal scoring right now. And he's been amazing this season. Really, really high caliber play from Matthews. And it's something that we've discussed. And I think it gets back to, Blake, what you've said before. Like, in terms of this Leafs team right now, it's hard to be impressed. It's hard to be impressed at times. And you end up still right now focusing on things that are new and things that were unexpected, right? That's why we focus so much more on Kasha than we do Auston Matthews. Mm-hmm. And really, from, like, if we had the narrative pie or the discussion pie, how much we've done of Kasha compared to Auston Matthews, who's obviously the best player on the Toronto Maple Leafs and the number one driving force outside of Jack Campbell this season for why they have been so elite. It is kind of funny. But it is one of those things where you go, well, what am I supposed to say? Yeah, he's amazing. He's really good. But I do love numbers like that, because it really does contextualize how good this guy is. That it isn't just he's fourth in goals. It's, no, this guy actually is the best goal scorer on the planet. And after those next, what, how many games are remaining in the season? 42?
45 or so. I don't remember the exact number.
Yeah, so once we get to that point, my guess is that Matthews will make up that ground. And even as good of a goal scorer as Draisaitl is, who we saw last night, boy, that shot is heavy. I still think Matthews will end up passing him. There's a reason why that guy was a favorite to win the Rocket Richard trophy. So quickly, before we break, we don't see the Zach Hyman tribute, which was super weird. And I know that we had the broadcast, so this makes this a little awkward, but I'm not really sure why they didn't show that last night. They just come back and it's Zach Hyman waving his hand to the crowd.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, all right. So someone made the point to me on Twitter that they should have just shelved it for when fans were back, and I thought, you couldn't do that, right? You had to do at least something in the building for Zach, a little welcome back. I just don't know why you wouldn't show that to people at home when you know everyone is at home, or why that wouldn't have been more of a focal point. Either way, they had him mic'd up, which was something, but then this is the classic hockey thing where all they show is, hey, buddy, you having a good day, buddy? Yeah, I'm having a good day, buddy. Oh, wow. And then Zach Hyman goes, don't go on the ice yet, Draisaitl. And that was it. And I went, okay. Seemed crap.
Yeah, I was very surprised that we didn't. I know in real time, obviously, you're during the commercials when they would play it, but I have seen multiple times that they've played the tribute back, either during the intermission, like when Marlowe got his record, when Joe Thornton gets whatever. Like, these players get their moment in the broadcast somewhere. So I was kind of waiting for it. And the only circulation that we've seen is the cute little wave at the fans, like he's being, like, you know, a little bit sarcastic and he's playing it up. But very strange that it wasn't released, and very strange that even, like, the Maple Leafs Twitter account didn't post it out and say, you know, thanks for all your time and whatever. Because sometimes they've
even done
that.
What even was it? Did they just say thank you, Zach? Did they just put that on the Jumbotron? Like, there was no video tribute, actually, that none of us actually know? This is now I'm down conspiracy theory avenue. Are they punting this down the line? Like, if Danny Green can get 100 mulligans on his championship ring, we can't get one mulligan for Zach Hyman's thing. Like, remember Isaiah Thomas's Celtics return? How it was like, hey, Isaiah Thomas is hurt, so we're holding it off. Hey, it's Paul Pierce's retirement ceremony, so we're holding off on this video tribute for Isaiah Thomas, and it ended up like 2 years later. I don't know. Maybe they could have ended up doing something like that. Maybe that's the way they should have handled it, or that there will still be some acknowledgement when he returns in front of fans. I don't know, but it was just strange. And I will say this. I'm sorry, but when there's no fans... there's no fans and we have a mic'd up and it's that chummy between Hyman and the Leafs, I don't expect them to be hating each other. I thought Mitch Marner was actually kind of funny, where he's in the face-off, he's up against Hyman and he just says, you better try to get the fans fired up or whatever. He's making a joke at him, and they, you know, they have that little exchange. It was way too friendly. Way too friendly. You know you're mic'd up and you're standing there talking to Wayne Simmonds about your kids. Okay, don't you guys have each other text messages? Like, can't you text about this at some other time? I get it. Athletes are friends, and this isn't the 1970s where everybody hates each other and you go to your dressing room. But Zach Hyman did leave. He did leave. He's on the Oilers. Can you just not smooch? Like, can there be a level of, you don't have to hate each other, or you don't have to ham it up for the fans, but also just don't smooch in front of us? Just, nobody wants to see you smooch. Maybe just that. Am I being too old here? I thought it was a little bit too much smooching. And then I'll give you the full conspiracy then, since I'm letting this all out. I thought Hyman went up easy on a couple of forechecks, and I thought there was one opportunity in that game where he had a chance to just absolutely paste Austin Matthews, and he did not do it. And if I was an Oilers fan and Zach Hyman just got that kind of money to play for Edmonton and we're in a slump and Hyman went home and he was smooching like that, I'd be pretty pissed. Just saying. I was okay with it as a Leaf fan. Oilers fans, too much smooching for me.
Too much smooching. And yeah, I mean, Hyman, the last 10 games he's played in have all been Oilers losses. He's got 1 point in his last seven.
Yeah.
You expect a little bit of hunger there.
That's right.
That, you know, you don't know what's in that guy's head and what that game is like for him. But yeah, I'm sure he was disappointed to have no crowd for his return too. But fairly underwhelming, and it's been a fairly underwhelming month or so for him. Anyway,
do we agree that Bill Belichick is the greatest coach that all of us have seen in our lifetimes?
Yeah, but now you're going to think that I'm Team Patriots again. But no, I think I can say that without you claiming that I'm a Patriots fan.
Ailish is so used to me teasing her now that she's like on guard with her takes. She thinks everything's a trap. I love it. That's so good. I want you that way. You know, this is a prison yard. You know, stay guarded. So, Bill Belichick, the greatest tactician of all time. What does he do before games? He compliments you. He's constantly complimenting God. You know who else does that? LeBron James. Compliment city. LeBron, when he's about to play somebody, wow, you're going to get some compliments. And I don't know. I would just think that if somebody's talking about how's your kids and blah, 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 and it's just a way of undercutting a guy who's supposed to be playing with a lot of intensity. This sounds like the hottest take of hottest takes, but I'm sorry. I'm a fan, and I can only think about how I would be feeling as an Oilers fan watching Zach Hyman in that game, and I'd be thinking, hey man, stop smooching, go out there and level somebody. Show that you're on our team now. You know, I'd want this is like in the movies, right? Where maybe I've been watching too much Cobra Kai. It's like, hey, you want to show your true allegiance? You better karate kick the other kid in the chest right in front of our dojo. And I didn't see any karate kicks from Zach Hyman to the dojo. I think that guy's still Miyagi-Do and he's no Cobra Kai. Yeah, that's right.
Ailish is lost. She
yeah, doesn't I don't know that show, but I can follow the web, and I understand what you mean. But you know what? We kind of predicted this yesterday. Like, I was going to, usually I'll bet on somebody to come back and put points up. But honestly, we were like, this doesn't give me the Zach Hyman revenge game vibes. And it surely didn't. So glad you didn't throw just $5 on anything, you know?
Yeah, you're just $5 stealing money. We'll have to talk about that at 8:30.
Yeah, later. Yeah.
Oh,
Ailish, Ailish the bank robber, Ailish the bandit, just the bandito, Ailish, who's on the run from the law right now. Okay, so yeah, either way, we'll take off our Leafs panic hats. Everybody's already got enough anxiety right now in this province. Mm-hmm. Maybe we don't need to do any more of this.
Maybe everyone does need a little more smooching, JD. Zach Hyman's trying to heal us all.
Yeah. I don't want to be thinking about all you need is love as I'm watching a hockey game, okay? That's really never what I want to have. And that's what I was thinking of last night during the smooch fest. And as Zach Hyman was like not hitting people, that was nice. Although, hey, made me feel a little bit better about Michael Bunting. So let's take a break. Let's come back and do the A-list. And by the way, before we do that, subscribe to this podcast. Leave a 5-star review. I ask you every day. So if you're tired of it, just do it. Then I'll stop asking. You know, we get millions and millions of them, then I will stop asking. So once we get there.
Millions.
You know, one at a time. You know, one at a time. One person today. This is when musicians go, if my music can touch just one person, and they're like, oh, your check is getting limited by 5%. And it's like, I'm not going out there. Like, that's them. But no, if we can just get one podcast subscriber, one 5-star review today, then it was all worth it. Then it was all worth this pitch. Hit us up on Twitter. Hit us up on Instagram. Hit the text line at any time, 590-590. And we will come back with the A-list. It's the Fan Morning Show. JD Bunkus, Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The Fan Morning Show. And it's Baby Friday. JD, nothing?
No, I'm just more convinced that you don't love Baby Friday for the right reasons.
I love Baby Friday.
No, but it's supposed to be Baby Friday because you drink on this day and then you kind of mail it in the
I didn't
next
know
day,
the rules
right?
of Baby Friday.
It's basically a long weekend. No, but I think that the reason why you like Baby Friday is just because this has the word baby and you go, Baby Friday.
Yeah, Baby Friday.
You're like, it's so cute. You view it as like a tiny little Friday next to Big Friday.
It is.
That's why you love it, is you
Big
visualize
Friday's
it.
Like cuddling little Baby Friday in his arms.
I'll look after you.
It's the A-list block, and we haven't even got to the A-list, and JD's already shooting you down, A-list.
Yep. Yep.
Yep.
As is tradition.
New Year's resolution.
As is my right.
Okay. Well, let's get right into it then.
Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
Well. Here we are again. Another day. Another list of things that I try to make your day better with.
Yeah.
Try to give you a little bit of light in this dark, dark world that we live in.
Thank you. We appreciate you.
I try my best. So does Tony Parker, former NBA star, who has listed his house for sale this week at $19.5 million. Now, it's not just a regular home. And I want you to close your eyes and imagine. You wake up in your mansion. It has a greenhouse, fruit orchard, a 1,500 bottle wine cellar.
Oh, yeah, I'm French.
A 6,000 square foot fitness center, a movie theater. And, oh, wait, did I mention it has a water park that rivals? Yes, if you take a look at this house, it has an entire water park that is 10 times as nice as Canada's Wonderland. It is absolutely the most ridiculous house I've ever seen.
Okay. I have a question here. Where is this house? Do you know?
Probably in LA somewhere. Let me just click.
Or is it because is this in San
Texas,
Antonio?
Texas?
Yeah, so it is. So this is his Texas home. Because I've always wondered some of these celebrity homes. I always want to know how long they actually lived in them and who's buying these things.
Or who they just build it and like, okay, that's nice.
And they go, I lived here, a celebrity. Do other millionaire, billionaire people who buy those houses care? It's a weird thing. I almost wonder if some of it's fake, just to like dunk on us, the peasants. Hey, look at my house. There's a water park. Ooh, well, why would you ever leave? Why would you ever leave that water park house? Where are you going to go? What's better than water park house? Movie theater house. You're going to move somewhere better than that? No. Who's moving in? Who's buying that place?
Someone with $19.5 million that is interested in all of those things that I mentioned.
Doesn't even sound like real money to me. That's just like fake. That's a fake money. That's not a real money that you spend on a house. And we live in Toronto, where all people do whenever you hang out with anybody is talk about the cost of their house. Oh, my house. And did you know this person's house?
You're
cost
never
going
to get into the market. My parents all the time.
House cost this money. And wow, they paid that. And you're like, oh, thrilling conversation. Actually, you know what? Lock us down again until we're done talking about Toronto real estate. Lock us down until we can go to dinner or drinks with people without talking about what the price is of your parents' home. That's the new rule.
So my question to you guys, and we can get listener input, is what was the one thing you would want in your mansion? So you get the $19.5 million budget. You're allowed to be creative. You're allowed to put something of your wildest dreams into your mansion. Is it something I already mentioned, or is it something different? Blake, you go ahead.
I want an ice rink. I don't want like a backyard rink. I want like a rink. I feel like the basketball court is like an easy one. Like I've been to a house in Newfoundland that has half a basketball court in it. I don't think it's shooting high enough. I want to spend the money on keeping a section of that house with fresh ice for me.
I like that.
If people want to come over. And
can I come over?
We'll see. We'll see.
I just like picturing the Zamboni driver, the live-in Zamboni driver that always comes kind of in your kitchen. Hey, Blake, can I use the bathroom, buddy?
No, that's the chores for the kids. Oh, you want your ice time?
Oh, you've got kids. Maybe that should be your dream first, is that you find a wife and you have
buddy,
the children to fill this home with love.
We're talking about a situation where I have $20 million. We can we can imagine I have a girlfriend in this situation, too. I'm not sure what's the bigger stretch, but
I like how she's not your wife, she's just your girlfriend.
She's
like
your girlfriend.
Temporary. We've had kids together, but she's still just
okay. My nephew's doing the chores. Chubby little nephew in a couple years.
So good.
JD, what do you want?
I wouldn't mind Tony Parker's wine cellar. That would be a pretty good
start.
Yeah,
I'm looking at the photo of it. You want that wine cellar.
Seriously, though, so I am a total peasant when it comes to wine, in the sense of I have deluded myself into this thought of, well, I can tell what the good stuff is and the difference in the bad stuff, the swill, but I don't really have the palate. And I got no palate. There's nothing. People could trick me so easily with a blind test. You could put 10 glasses of wine in front of me and then
it's
be
so
like,
red.
Yeah, I'd finish them all and I'd be like, wow, this one was the best. And it would be like, they're all the same. I'd be like, ugh! Damn it! I'd be so upset. But there's something so baller about when you meet people who have wine collections. It's such an adult-ass thing. Mm. I'm there at the LCBO. If I go to the vintage section, I'm like,
you're like, you don't belong here, sir.
Yeah, I know. It's like that little wall. And I go, I spent $30 on a bottle of wine. Someone come tell me I'm an adult now. That's someone come over here and respect that I'm better than the people who know what they're doing looking in the normal wine. I don't know. I just think that's a cool thing. Maybe it's because I'm getting older, but the idea that you would have people over and you get to go, hey, here's the story of what we're going to drink tonight, rather than just my move, which is, you want Bud Light? They're in the fridge.
The $30 wine is such a great trick because if you go, I don't know if anyone knows this, if you go into the liquor store and you get the cheap wine, you will get carded no matter what. But if you buy the third cheapest wine instead, they're like, oh, this guy's an adult. We don't need to check. He's getting the slightly above swill wine.
When's the last time you were carded? You have a huge beard. I can't.
I'm just saying in general. I don't get carded.
It's like, were you like 12 when you were buying?
No, I'm talking about
carded
you.
Every time, and I feel like that's like the best thing about being my age is like you're on the cusp where she's like, "Whoa, you look great for your age," or you're like, "Oh, you look like a toddler. You cannot buy that wine."
I still get carded. If I go in and I'm wearing a baseball cap.
Stuff with a mask, too.
Just your eyes. That's usually when I don't get carded because
They look at the bags under your eyes.
No, just if you're – Blake's right. If you go into the LCBO and you have an adult LCBO order, they're not going to card you. If you go in and get Fireball and
– White Claws. Like,
yeah, they're going to be, hey, can you pull the mask down, please? Can you have a look at this? But, yeah, if you're going in and getting whiskey, they're not thinking, oh, okay, you're 14 years old. No, it's
yeah,
not.
You've got really red Solo cups peeking out of your backpack.
Yeah,
like, whoa,
exactly.
Whoa, whoa.
Yeah. Exactly.
Anyway, JD, okay. this is not obviously it doesn't apply to me, but this is going to shock you. Not everything is about me. So I was just trying to, you know, for the listener out there.
Or for you. So your thing was that you were trying to get underage people to drink. Interesting. Yeah, you were like, hey, underagers, here's a little trick for you that old
Blakey
uses.
I got drugs at my cabin. Yeah, like, I got exactly. underage drinking
Yeah,
tips.
Bad influence. So, yes, I agree. But, yes, there's something to just a massive wine cellar that I think mm-hmm. is cool, and I would love to have that. There's a lot of other things, but like that's just where I'm rich. But that's the number one thing I'm starting is I'm just hijacking the multimillionaire French guy's wine cellar, Tony Parker's, and saying there's some good stuff in here. Now I'm going to tell stories about each one of these bottles of wine that you open up.
Ailish, what about you?
Okay, well, obviously the wine cellar for sure. I would like the indoor rink for sure. An old school arcade with like a pinball machine and like a pool table. Ski ball, that could be really fun. But this is going to be the nerdiest thing, but a really cool library, like a quiet reading area that looks like it's old and you can go in there and it's just like everyone shuts
get
up.
The ladder that moves around.
Yeah, the
around.
Ladder. Yeah, and maybe ladder. It's behind a bookshelf that you go in there and nobody knows about it. It's got like nice mahogany, smells like Ivy League Dartmouth education. I can go in there and I can be snobby and I can talk about my sorority.
I like this for you.
Just shelf like after shelf of Archie comics for as far as
that would be mine. No, that would be mine. As I'd have a big leather chair in my library, and they'd be like, what
comics.
Are you reading right now? I'd be like, edition 323, Reggie goes to the beach. Reggie at the beach, getting into shenanigans, smoking a pipe, and then reading Archie comics. That would definitely be mine. All these books on the shelves that I've never read or cracked. That would definitely – I like that choice. Cool-looking library is a good choice. Definitely like that one.
Okay, well, text in if you have other things you'd want in your mansion. I would love to get some inspiration in case I ever make it. Okay, thank you. Next up on the A-list. Tonight, you can watch your favorite Canadian hockey players, not including me, the other favorites of yours, Team Spooner, play Team Felician in the Canadian version of Family Feud. That will air tonight at 7:30. And it is a royal lineup of Spooner, Natalie Spooner, Sarah Nurse, Marie-Philippe Poulin, Laura Stacey, and Blair Turnbull on one team facing champion hurdler Perdita Felician, along with her fellow teammates Angela White, Jen Saling, Tabia Charles Collins, and Pam Finette Buiza. So they're
like
all.
This is the first time you're reading these names.
That was a tough one. They're both playing for a type of foundation. So Spooner will be playing for the Grindstone Award, which is a hockey foundation that helps young female hockey players with financial restrictions get into sport. And the other team is playing for the Denise House, which is a women and children crisis home. So they're both playing for a better cause. Obviously, my money's on Spooner's team. We might put this in the wake and rake, especially because my former teammate, Laura Stacey, she's got her Ivy League education on that stage. And I said, if she doesn't get every answer right, we're going to revoke her alumni status. So yeah, that's tonight. Been looking forward to this for about a month since they posted the information. So yeah, tune in and go Spooner.
I feel like I would choke on a game show. It's like actually my greatest fear is that I'd get put on one of these things just for what Ailish just said. You better get them all right. You'd be like, I used to watch game shows because who didn't when you were in college and when you're in high school? Part of the things of skipping school when you were younger was just, I watch game shows all day. And you'd say to yourself, especially even in college, you go, why don't they put better shows on TV? Because people are at work, you scrub. That's why. Just now watch your game shows and shut up. And Yeah, millionaire, always huge, huge millionaire guy. Millionaire was clutch. Loved me some Millionaire. Because Millionaire was the perfect game show in the sense of it would give all the dumbos like me 8 questions ramp up where you would be like, oh, I'd get up to 60,000.
So easy.
Yeah, I'd get up to that money. But I was always afraid of the choke. And I was always afraid of having to use the lifeline too early or having the feeling that you'd have to use the lifeline too early. Imagine calling a friend. You're like, oh, hey, I know you're standing by. They're like, what number are you at? $500. Who's first U.S. president? You know, like that kind of thing. That's a tough look. But so good luck to all those ladies with the no choke factor. Because I just feel like that's playing for the charity is almost even worse. Because now you have to go tell those people.
There's kids waiting for you. They're hoping and praying that they'll play hockey and you're not going to give them the chance if you blow it.
Yeah. I love this element of sitting at home watching this and rooting for Team Spooner and then like implicitly being like, ha, Denise House, take that.
Yeah.
No money for you and your charitable cause.
Yeah. I've always wondered about that. Do they just have – is there a secret agreement that
they must.
The other places get money? It just seems always so weird to me that the charities are at home, especially it's like – you know, children with cancer, and they're like, go team. And then they're like, you lost. And the kids are watching from their hospital beds, and you're like, oh, okay. Seems harsh. Do we not have an agreement beforehand to make sure that everybody's getting some money here? Yeah, I hope so too. It's always the weird element of people playing for their charities. You're like, who needs the money the most? Okay, let's figure this out.
But I'm going to put them in my wake and rake later, or just mention it in the 8:30 block. My money's on Spooner. And then the last thing for the A-list today. So obviously the Manning cast has been a really fun reinvigoration to NFL. But there's a potential that there could be an Alex Rodriguez version of the Manning cast for baseball this year. Obviously he'd need to maybe have a co-host that has good chemistry, and they need to figure out if he's going to be leaving Sunday Night Baseball, but there's rumors around it. ESPN wants to try to bring that type of energy into the MLB season. And obviously Manning cast isn't every week. I think it was only 10 of the 17 weeks this year. So would they do the same thing with A-Rod? Would they have him every week? Nonetheless, I think they want to try to have something younger and more, I don't know, accessible for fans this year in the MLB. So that's something to stay tuned for. And I guess my question for you guys was, would you watch that? Would it be better than Manning cast? And if he needed a co-host, who would you be putting on the stage with him?
I don't have an answer for the co-host other than I just think this is the wrong guy. This would be a mistake. This, I don't care about A-Rod. A-Rod sucks. And A-Rod's hated. And
it's just A-Rod the name, I guess, eh?
And unless A-Rod is going to start telling me Jennifer Lopez stories, then I don't really care. I think that other people in baseball think A-Rod is a dork. I think A-Rod, probably around celebrities, they think he's a dork. One of the cool things about the Mannings is when they bring on celebrities, it's boring and it doesn't work. But when they bring on football people, there's a reverence to Peyton Manning that is very interesting to watch. And I love him chopping it up with football players. It's a really great component of it. They're obviously going to do celebrities. It's always going to be a draw. I understand what the Manning cast is. It's not just for diehard football fans. But to me, the most enjoyable parts of it are watching the quarterback break down the play. I've already heard, Alex, baseball, you already have so much space during a broadcast to break down an at-bat, to break down plays that I'm already getting that insight. Like, what are you going to tell me that's any different? Football is so complicated that having one of the most genius quarterbacks in the history of the game break down the game for you with his brother is something different. A-Rod, what? Oh, like the difference is A-Rod's on a couch? I don't care. That's lame as hell. If you're going to do one of these live streams, give me somebody like a Dallas Braden. Give me somebody like a Will Middlebrooks. Give me somebody with personality. Give me a bunch of guys that are just watching a baseball game, chopping it up. Give me Kevin Youkilis having a chew and having a beer and telling me hilarious stories as I'm watching the game. Like, you got to go full baseball players actually being comfortable, uncensored. A-Rod seems like actually the worst choice you can think of. That's like what, you know, this is where I wonder if some of these executives are actually sports fans, where they make these decisions. You go, who wants that? who do you think this is good for? You think it's just because he's a big name? A-Rod? Nah. Nah, that's a terrible idea. I hate this idea. I don't want to see it. I want to watch it. I don't care about it.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'll just throw one quickly, and it's only just because I know they have chemistry. David Ortiz stands out to me. I don't know that I'd want to watch 3 hours of it, but I know him and A-Rod have a fun chemistry element. But, yeah, I don't think it's going to work quite as well for baseball. I think A-Rod's good in the role he's in now, but like you said, JD, there's already enough space to do that kind of stuff throughout a regular baseball broadcast that it doesn't really necessitate it. But same way.
I thought I was going to get through the A-list without JD being upset, but I'm glad I got it in there.
Oh, just, I just watched an interview with David Ortiz where he talks about Pedro Martinez and how they called him Anaconda. And that's the kind of content I'm here for. I really enjoyed that.
Okay, yeah. They better spice it up if they're going to do it. Sounds like we are in agreement.